807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. It's nice outside right now, according to Dr. Bill Williams. Might not last for long. We're looking at some thunderstorms in our future. You know, as long as it doesn't get too hot too soon, I'll be all right. But the thunderstorms, obviously something to watch out for, and lots to watch out for in Montgomery. And that's why we get this man on every Wednesday morning. Almost a Tuesday morning. Every Wednesday morning, we get Jeff Poor from Yellowhammer and Lanyap and WVNN Radio in Huntsville. Am I missing anything, Jeff? Oh, let's see if I can get Jeff up there. There he is. There he is. Am I missing anything, Jeff?
Breitbart News as well.
Breitbart. That's right. How could I forget Breitbart News? You write for everybody and you cover everything. But specifically today, we are talking about general session in Montgomery. They're back after a spring break. I think they got back into session yesterday, and the spring break after 2 weeks, of course, they had the special session for the infrastructure and gas tax bills. But why a spring break after 2 weeks, Jeff?
Because that's traditionally when you have your school spring breaks. They used to call it AEA back in the day, because the AEA would do a conference that week. But it just has fallen on the week that people could be with their families or whatever. So that's a tradition of the legislature, like it or hate it. I would argue the less they are in Montgomery, the better off we are.
That's a good point. You know, I was wondering if they use that break to kind of come back and get the temperature of their constituents again and see where they are on some of the stuff they're working on in Montgomery. Do they do that at all when they have that spring break? They go around and find out kind of what their people are liking or not liking about what they're doing in Montgomery?
Some do. Most go to the beach or the mountains or wherever hunting, but some do a little bit of that. Now, they don't do town halls like a member of Congress would. Well, some of them do, but most of members of the legislature, they show up at, like, county party meetings, Rotary Club, that type of things. The ones that come to the listening session town halls, there's just not as many of those that do that.
In the last hour, Sean and I were discussing a bit more about the lottery legislation that they've started up there, and this new clean lottery bill sponsored by Greg Albritton from Range, and then of course you have Pro Tem Del Marsh from Anniston, who helped co-sponsor that bill. The difference in this and the bill that was filed earlier by Jim McClendon, break that out for us, and whether you think this has more of a chance of passing.
Yeah, it certainly does have more of a chance of passing, because it has Del Marsh's name on it. And he has the ability to really steer things through the Senate, fast track them. So that's why Marsh being tied to it is more important. But I think this is it takes away the lottery machines, the virtual lottery machines, and carves out for the dog tracks. That's why it's more of a has more of a chance. Also, I would say the Porch Creek Indians seem to be more in favor of this lottery than this lottery bill than the previous one. So I would give it a much better odds at getting through to the House. But it's really the hang up on all of this, just for your listeners to understand, has nothing to do with the morality of the lottery. I think people in Alabama are well past that. What I think it is just making sure that all the little parties around this whole gambling issue are happy, and then folks can actually get the lottery they want with the Powerball, the Mega Millions, and the scratch-offs.
Yeah, has that been discussion? Because I think there are several states that have their state lotteries, but they don't have those multi-state lotteries. And I don't know if that was included in the first bill from McClendon, but this would allow for the Mega Millions, the Powerball, those massive jackpots that you see advertisements for and stories about across the nation.
Yeah, as far as I know, it would. I think the only difference is just the virtual lottery terminals in the two bills, between the McClendon bill and this Marsh-Albritton bill.
Also on the docket there in Montgomery, Common Core repeal, that's been a hot topic lately. What's going on with this? I think Common Core has been around in Alabama for, 8 years now, and it seems like Alabamians have been disgusted with it for the entire time.
Yeah, and when you talk to the administrators, or even the state school board, the superintendent of the public schools in Alabama, Mackey, Eric Mackey, he will tell you that it's not Common Core in the sense that what legally defines Common Core, but it is the standards. And, you know, I think obviously Del Marsh is setting himself up during the United States Senate. So he did a fund the wall, GoFundMe page, check off on your taxes, and he's doing this with the Common Core, right? Because it just polls at a certain level. So what I know is it got through the Senate, and it got through by a big, big margin. Where it's going to get slowed down, and I think may not even get a vote on the floor, is the House of Representatives. Terry Collins, who's the chairwoman of the Education Committee in Montgomery, in the House, doesn't seem to think be very very interested in giving this a hearing. It'll might not even make it through committee. The language is a little too broad, a little too aggressive, I think, and that's probably its doom in the House. So I wouldn't expect much more to come out of the Common Core repeal beyond this point. Maybe another effort makes it, but with so much going on in the legislature, it's hard to see that this has much of a future beyond what happened in the Senate already.
Yeah, there seems to be so many things on their plate this session. I mean, we started off with the gas tax bill, which obviously came to the forefront. That's why they called special session so early. But lottery, a huge deal. Also, you've got the prisons, which I don't know if they've been. Have they talked prisons at all? Prison.
They haven't talked about prisons. We had Chris England. He's a Democrat representative from Tuscaloosa on our show earlier this week. And really, he thinks that there's a real reluctance in the legislature to even want to deal with it right now. What could happen is, so Ivy has the option of going at it on her own legally. She could say, we're going to sign a deal with a private company that's going to build prisons in Alabama. It's going to be built three facilities, and then we're going to lease them as the state and just staff them with Department of Corrections staffers, and it'll run just like a normal prison, except the state won't own them. They'll be leasing them from a big company, right? There's a lot of pushback against that, but it would cost some $900 million. And really, that's Ivy's trump card. If the legislature isn't able to get together and figure this prison situation out, then Ivy has that option. But there are people in the legislature that do not want her to do that because, obviously, you have some places with prisons in a district. It's a big economic activity generator. You have, the people that are employed by the prison. You have the utilities. You have all these things that kind of make these communities run because they just employ so many people. So over time, that's been the hang up. That's been the stumbling block, is getting that everybody on board with it, because there are some people all around the state. And really, the prison situation in the state of Alabama, it's not just two or three big facilities. There's smaller facilities scattered all around the state. And that's where you find the problem, trying to get to where they need to be to figure this out with the federal government, saying if you don't make the prison system better, we're going to take it over. If the federal government takes it over, then it becomes a lot more costly to get it out of that situation.
One thing that always makes the national headlines is any legislation on abortion for or against. And we've seen Mississippi recently, I believe, completely ban abortion. And I think South Carolina recently passed a bill as well, but yesterday you had 77 of the lawmakers here in Alabama signing on in support of bills that make it a felony for a doctor to perform an abortion in Alabama. Tell us more about this.
Yes, so Terry Collins, who we mentioned earlier in this segment, she has put out a bill that's just going to go completely criminalize abortion, right? And the idea is not that it'll pass and be the law in Alabama, but it'll have to go through the courts. And with the federal courts looking at it, there's certain the lower courts will overturn the law and invalidate the law. And then hopefully it makes it all the way to the Supreme Court. Then we could get another shot at Roe v. Wade, which is the 73 decision that nullified any state ban on abortion. The thinking is that you have a different court now, perhaps it's more conservative, then we can, maybe they kick it down to the states and let them decide what abortion is, if it's legal or illegal. I think there's a lot of just wanting to test the waters to see what the temperature is with the judiciary.
Is that why we've seen so many states recently pass legislation like this to try to get it to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, the anticipation is that the best of the state laws will make it to the federal court system and up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will finally hear it, and that will give it the opportunity to either be overturned or upheld.
All right. Well, can you hang out with us for this next segment here?
Absolutely.
All right. I want to talk about Joe Reed, the head of the Alabama Democratic Conference, and him splitting the Democrats up right now. Also, we'll get into a little 2020 talk, some national politics. Biden faces more accusers. I think the number's up to four now. And Bernie Sanders has raised more money than any other Democrat that appears to be running for office in 2020.
It's the money primary.
The money primary. 818 on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings, and we'll be back with more right after this. Thank you, Kane. 823 now on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Sean out. Hopefully he'll be back by midday having some dental issues. No one likes that.
No, not at all.
So painful. So painful. But in his stead, we have me, Dalton Orwick, Mark Holliday in here as well.
Good morning.
And as we are every Wednesday morning, joined by Jeff Poor from Yellowhammer, writes for Lanyap, writes for Breitbart, and on the airwaves, WVNN in Huntsville. Was happy enough to, or was grateful enough to, I'm not using the right
gracious
word. Gracious
enough
gracious
to join us.
Enough to take time out of his busy morning and join us on Mobile Mornings. And we kind of discussed what's been going on up in Montgomery as they are back in session following their spring break week. But another big story in Alabama surrounds Joe Reed, the leader of the Alabama Democratic Conference. And he attacked the Democrat Senator, Doug Jones, recently and blamed white people for leaving the Alabama Democratic Party. Jeff, what's going on here, and do the Democrats, I guess, now officially have a Joe Reed problem?
They've had a Joe Reed problem for some time. if you listen to many of the candidates, especially in this last 2018 cycle, you know, it was supposed to be a bright new day for Alabama Democrats because they had, won the Senate seat with Doug Jones. And for the first time in decades, it seemed like they had in all the major offices, they had a candidate running against a Republican. And as it turned out, that was all just talk and wishful thinking, because at the end of the day, the Republican in most of those districts just won by a landslide. It wasn't even close. So you have then kind of when they did the autopsy of what happened in 2018 in Alabama, they blamed the Alabama Democratic Party because it just didn't do anything. It just didn't help. It didn't have any data. It didn't tell people where to knock on doors. All the things you would think the state party would do to kind of give its candidates a heads up. It didn't do any of that, and it left them left a lot of the candidates hanging out to dry. So then, fast forward to this next summer, which was, you know, let's look at getting some new leadership in there. Like I said, Doug Jones tried to support another candidate to get an election against Nancy Worley. That didn't work out. But the way it works is Joe Reed, as the Alabama Democratic Caucus chairman, they get to dictate the board members just because of the way the rules are written now. And Alabama's sort of passed with segregation and keeping the politics of the American community, trying to keep them limited. The Democratic Party said, well, we're going to set it up to where you can't do that anymore. And it's still this antiquated way of running the Democratic Party that's in place, right? So Joe Reed is able to appoint as many board members as he wants, and those board members are able to vote the same people in over and over again, which in this case has been Nancy Worley. And all they've done is just kind of let the Alabama Democratic Party just kind of exist and not really do much. So now the Democratic National Committee's got involved. Tom Perez says, you're going to have new elections, that we don't like the way this went down, that you didn't take, you didn't sign in and do the necessary paperwork when you appointed these new board members for this election. So now they're making them do it all over again. But Joe Reed, he doesn't like that the National Democratic Party is getting involved in this, and he's insisting that it's Doug Jones that's trying to mount this coup. And then he goes on to send out this letter to members of his organization, the Alabama Democratic Caucus, saying that it wasn't African Americans, it wasn't blacks that led to the fall of the Democratic Party over time, as a state sort of transitioned from a Democratic state, whether like the old blue dog, yellow dog coalition state, to what it is now, which is pretty much the Democratic Party in Alabama is the African American Party. He says it's because whites left the party and it has only left them of a very, very small minority. So he's really playing the race card. And I suspect we'll have a new, they're going to have elections in May, but I don't think this is far from over. But as long as you have the most powerful Democrat in Alabama, which I argue is Doug Jones pushing the envelope here, don't expect this to go away. You're going to have this civil war go back and forth for at least, I think, going to be a little while if they're not able to get new leadership in place in the Alabama Democratic Party.
In the story you wrote on this on yellowhammernews.com, in the letter that Reed wrote where he placed these accusations on Jones, did he really address it? He said he addressed it to the prevailing ethnic minority members of the state Democratic Executive Committee. I mean, are there any other Democrats other than Jones going after Reed and trying to get new leadership in place? It sounds like it's not even a race issue. They just want someone in there who's going to unite the party.
Yeah, and you listen to the talking heads on the left. In a state like Alabama, there's a lot of media talking heads that come at things from the left. The Kyle Whitmire's, Josh Boone, even Archibald. He's away on book tour. But they acknowledge this is a problem, and they've spoken out against the Democratic Party in Alabama not doing much. But even if you look at the candidates that ran, remember Mallory Hagan, the former Miss America that ran for Congress against Mike Rogers at Alabama's 3rd Congressional District, she's been very outspoken still about it. It's sort of an infrastructure that doesn't exist. It just exists to exist, and in every election, Joe Reed could send out a letter to all the Democratic candidates in the state demanding money for to get out, quote unquote, get out the vote effort, and it's not really used for that. It's kind of used as a like the party boss fund, because Joe Reed essentially is the Democratic Party boss, even though he's not officially the head of it.
Before we let you go, I got to get your take on Joe Biden. He's now had four women accuse him of inappropriate touching after two more came forward yesterday. The president talked about it last night and basically blamed the socialists for trying to take Biden out of the race. Is this enough to knock him out of 2020 before he even officially announces his campaign?
No, I don't think so. I do think it's problematic for Joe Biden. They moved the goalposts so much in order to get at Republicans that they've done it to, they're doing it to Joe Biden to get at him. So he's got to figure something out else about this and figure out how to address it. There's no question about it that there's all these photos and it just looks bad. But he needs to get out in front of this if he's going to run for president. He hasn't announced yet, but he's going to have to, because the problem isn't so much getting the support right now. It's making sure you have the donors and the money there for when you do run. You do start hitting Iowa and New Hampshire really hard.
All right, another great informative half hour with Jeff Poor. You can read his writing at Yellowhammer News, Lanyap, Breitbart, and listen to him on WVNN Huntsville. And where can they get in touch with you, Jeff?
Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And text coming in. Be careful out there. Sarah says, metal ladder in the middle of the Bayway at about the 32-mile marker going westbound. She says it's making all of the traffic swerve. So be careful out there. Watch out for the ladders. That can cause a major issue. We'll get more on traffic with Kane in just a minute. And news from WKRG. This is Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Hey, thank you, Kane. 836 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Right now, we head over to McConnell Automotive, where we talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. How are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great, and even better now that the news coming down from you that the April deals are rolling in at McConnell Automotive.
Yeah, we were really excited. We talked about it off air, didn't we? And, you know, bottom line is we have not seen the kind of incentives for our listeners out there. Dalton, across the board, you know, some months you have a great deal on a Sierra truck or a Buick Enclave, but The news we got yesterday is evidently Buick and GMC at the corporate level real serious about moving a lot of metal in April. And, you know, at McConnell, we always are. So what I want to invite everybody to do, if you're thinking about a Yukon, and that was the example Dalton used off air, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we hadn't seen great deals on those lately, to be honest, and we just got some huge discounts. So one of the examples is like 11% off the Yukon. That can be up to $7,000 or $8,000 off the real sticker price, and over $12,000 off even a regular price Sierra. So, man, we're excited. It just turns out that if you're going to buy a vehicle in the next 90 days, you need to make April your time to buy one at McConnell. And all they have to do is go to our website, McConnellAutomotive.com, and we're going to be posting those deals today, buddy.
That's some great news. We appreciate it, Mitch. Have a good one.
Man, y'all have a blessed day.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see Mitch and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You'll find them on Dolphin Street just east of I-65. 8:38 now, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig and Mark Holliday sitting in for Sean Sullivan. He'll hopefully be back for Midday Mobile.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
We will keep our fingers crossed and just get off the phone with Jeff Poor, who every time he comes in, all kinds of information about what's going on up there in Montgomery. And there's a lot to keep up with as they're back in session. And, I mean, just looking at the list of things we talked about, you got lottery, you got the abortion bill that looks like it's going to pass. You've got, of course, the gas tax bill that passed just a couple weeks ago. They haven't even gotten started on prisons. Might not have time for that. So maybe one of the busiest summers, springs in Montgomery in a long, long time.
Right. And, of course, Del Marsh stepped up and through the Senate repealed Common Core.
That's right. Common Core.
I'm a little disheartened that Jeff seems to think it may stall in the House. You know, this is one of those situations where it appears as though the overwhelming majority of the citizens don't want Common Core. And for it's almost been like Lucy in the football with Charlie Brown. They've all said, yeah, we'll take care of that. And then we run out of time. And it's like, we'll do that. And then something else happens. And so the citizens, by and large, have been clamoring for a repeal of Common Core, like you said, virtually since it was enacted,
right,
but about 8 years or so ago. And yet it takes Del Marsh throwing his hat into the ring or exploring a bid for U.S. Senate race that brings it to the forefront in the Alabama Senate.
So. You know, I wonder if Common Core didn't even come up during this session, if anyone would be talking about it outside of Montgomery. And if it doesn't make it through now, I feel like a lot of people are going to be upset if it doesn't get repealed.
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, we know the Common Sense Tea Party group in Baldwin County and the Gulf Coast Mobile Baldwin County area have been opponents to it since day one and have been actively lobbying to get it repealed, and to more or less degree of success from time to time, at least in an agreement from certain individual legislators, but yet nothing has happened until this point. And so I think they're going on a lobbying effort. I'm sure other conservative groups within the state are, you know, trying to put their best foot efforts forward to lobby their legislator and their congresspersons to get this repealed. But again, if it doesn't make it out of committee, you know, it's a dead end. It goes nowhere.
It just ends there. Yeah. Here closer to home, we're talking crime. It's been at the forefront of the conversation for the last few weeks. And yesterday, Public Safety Director James Barber and the Police Chief Lawrence Batiste, they met in front of the Mobile City Council's Public Safety Committee discussing how to limit the crime that's been going on in Mobile. And it seems like there's been more now than in the recent months and years. And after that meeting yesterday, last night, another shooting right around midnight at the Azalea Point Apartments, and the Mobile police were investigating that overnight. And they do have this Mobile County crime map that we talked with WKRG's Katarina Lukatich about earlier this morning, where each night the Mobile police list the crimes that have happened in the city and put them on the map, where they occurred and what kind of charges or what kind of, you know, whether it's an assault or a theft or anything like that. They put that on an interactive map for you to check out. I think I saw Fairhope has also shifted to that, where you can see the crimes that are going on there. We'll post a link to that crime map on our social media so you can check it out for yourself. But yeah, another shooting at Azalea Point Apartments, and it just seems like every weekend for sure, but almost every other day, a few every week.
It just really, the news is you know, extremely disheartening when it comes to that. So,
yesterday, when Public Safety Director Barber was asked about his plan going forward on this plan to fight against crime, he said, again, it's to be able to create an environment that stops that type of activity. You're never going to be able to risk your way out of this situation. You've got to stop the triggers from ever being pulled to begin with. And far too often, we're sending one to the graveyard, one to the penitentiary. And so it's not an effort as far as arrest and incarceration goes, but changing the environment, which acts as an incubator for violent criminal activity. And one of the plans that has been brought before, and we talked with Public Safety Director James Barber about this last week on Midday Mobile, is whether lawful gun owners who accidentally leave their cars unlocked or have their weapons stolen from the unlocked vehicle, whether they should have some sort of punishment for leaving those vehicles unlocked, and whether their concealed carry permits could be taken away. That's one of the ways that they said that they could be punished. And we've had that poll up on our website, and you can check it out now at fmtalk1065.com. Should concealed carry permit holders that have a gun stolen out of an unlocked vehicle have their permits revoked? Right now, the no's are winning out in a major way. 66% of you that have voted on the poll say no, concealed carry permits should not, permit holders should not have their permits revoked for having a gun stolen out of their unlocked vehicle. That is, of course, to the 34% that have voted yes. Also on our website right now, fmtalk1065.com, we have the three big things, which is updated daily with the three biggest things going on. And one of the things right now, that chase that ended in with four people dead on I-10 the other day in Baldwin County. Right now, the chase policy under scrutiny after that crash. They say that all the pursuits by the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office are being reviewed. Strict protocols and policies that guide officers on whether or not to pursue the investigation into this chase, just now beginning, of course, because it happened on Sunday. And state troopers said that it could be days or even weeks before positive identifications and notifications are made. They have identified the two people that were killed in that crash that were not involved in the chase. They were just driving down I-10 in their proper lane when the suspect that was running from the sheriff's deputies was in the other side, on the other side of the interstate, driving against traffic and crashed into this father and son. And the son died immediately there. I believe the father survived. He was an 81-year-old man, was airlifted, but he has survived that crash. But now, whether or not it could have been prevented, that's being reviewed. And the Baldwin County Sheriff's Office under scrutiny for this big crash. It's 8:45 right now on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings, and coming back, we'll talk a little bit about the 2020 race. We'll also take your calls and texts, 251-343-0106. Joe Biden facing more accusers now. He had two coming into this week, two people that accused him of inappropriate touching. And then yesterday, two more women accused the former vice president of inappropriately touching them. Also last night, the president, during a rally, spoke about this and basically blamed the socialists in the Democrat Party for taking Joe Biden down. He said, it looks like the only non-sort of heavy socialist, he's talking about Biden here, said he's being taken care of pretty well by the socialists. They got to him, our former vice president. I was going to call him. I don't know him well. I was going to say, welcome to the world, Joe. You having a good time, Joe? Are you having a good time? So we'll talk about that, whether you think Joe Biden will step out of the race before he even announces his campaign, and also Bernie Sanders raising more money than any other Democrat candidate. Will any of them give Donald Trump a race, and who would you like to see race against Trump? Who does he have the best shot at winning against, and who has the best shot at upending him from having a second presidential term? 8:46, FM Talk 106.5, we're coming right back. Thanks, Kane. 8:51, FM Talk 106.5, as we wrap up the Wednesday edition of Mobile Mornings. Dalton Orwig and Mark Holliday in with you. I'm talking crime in Mobile yesterday as the public safety director, James Barber, and the police chief, Lawrence Batiste, met in front of the Mobile City Council's Public Safety Committee about reducing crime in the city. After that, another shooting midnight, Azalea Point Apartments on Azalea Road. And we'll go to the phones right now, 343-0106 if you want to get in line. But right now we talk with Bill from downtown Dog River. Good morning, Bill.
Hi. This rise in crime is the inevitable result of the city's abandonment of much of the footprint of the city to provide more services for downtown. Here where I live, this last administration has been an absolute disaster. We've got more junk cars, more trash and litter, more abandoned houses. Unless you have a serious problem, the police may respond, but they've pretty much given up on my neighborhood, and the thuggery here has just flourished. Contrast that with New York City. I heard the police chief up there saying that they had made the city the safest it's been in generations by taking care of everything, including property crime. They're doing the opposite here.
Have you contacted anyone in the administration about this? And what's the typical police response when you call?
I actually took Mayor Stimson for a ride before he was mayor. I showed him the problems we've got. I showed him where we turned in complaints to 311 and the urban development people fraudulently abated the complaints. I've tried to call his office once. I never got a call back. I saw him at a public meeting and told him things weren't changing, and he turned his back on me and said, well, all I'm hearing is good stuff from down here.
All right.
But we've got my neighborhood has been abandoned and is a thug factory. And since that wonderful invention of the car, you really can't abandon any part of any city and not expect it to affect the rest of the city.
That's tough to hear, Bill, and we appreciate the call. And hopefully, Sean, hopefully we'll be able to get Sandy Stimson on sometime over the next few weeks or month or so to discuss crime here in Mobile, because over the last couple of weeks, it's certainly become a problem. And I know the police and the mayor, everyone involved, no one wants crime in Mobile. Now it's about trying to shut it down, and it just seems like every other night there's another shooting.
Well, Bill brought up a good point that and it's sometimes been referred to as the broken window theory, in that, you know, if you let small nonviolent crimes go and to try and focus your efforts on larger and more violent crimes, that's where, you know, you're best protected. But the problem is if you let those small and nonviolent crimes go, that promotes the bigger violent crimes. So it's like if you have a broken window in an abandoned house, if you allow you know, one window to be broken without repairing it, then that encourages other people to come along and break all the other windows and
right.
eventually burn the house down.
Yeah,
and so, you know, you've got to take care of those small, nonviolent property crimes as effectively and as aggressively as you do the larger violent crimes, which kind of all go hand in glove to reduce the overall crime picture in an area.
The problem, I guess, kind of like a gateway drug.
The
smaller
like
crimes
a
are
gateway drug,
a gateway
absolutely.
Drug to the more violent crimes. The problem is, you know, do the police and do the sheriffs, does the sheriff's office have enough people to go around to enforce everything? And when you're dealing with crimes like shootings at Azalea Point and our fallen officers, who we've had two over the last two years, is it of course it's easier to let the smaller stuff slide when you've got murders and assaults and all the other stuff going on. But if you start from the bottom, you know, how many people does that take? It's a lot that goes into it, I'm sure.
I know there is, and I obviously neither you nor I have any easy answers to this problem, but wow, I mean, you know, there is that theory there.
In the meantime, Mobile City Councilman LaVon Manzi sponsored a new ordinance that would keep alcohol, keep bars open longer in the downtown entertainment district. His ordinance would keep the bars open an extra hour Monday through Saturdays. Now, they would be open through 3 a.m. if this were to pass. On Sunday, bars would be able to stay open until 2 a.m. And then when you're talking crime, that's another thing right there. The longer the bars are open and the longer that alcohol is being served, the more people can get extra intoxicated, the more fights that could break out. You know, I haven't seen the stats on it, but that seems to be the general reason why cities shut down bars earlier, is to help prevent disputes and things of that nature.
I don't know. I mean, there may be some basis in fact there, but I'm not sure if that's just a shifting of when problems occurs to the time. I mean, I don't know.
You know, one thing I like to check out, we'll get to some 2020 talk really quickly here before we leave the morning show. I love looking at odds, okay? Mm-hmm. Just because it seems like, I mean, just like the stock market, you see how businesses are thriving or falling apart, what their business is doing by how their stock is doing. And odds are kind of the same way. And one of my favorite things are political odds. And yep, with all this coming out against Joe Biden, these four new accusers, you've had two new lately. You had two more before Monday. So that's four total now accusing him of inappropriate touching. And he hasn't even announced his bid yet.
Right.
Everyone seems to think that it's coming, but he hasn't officially announced. And now you've got the news that Bernie Sanders has raised more money than any other Democratic challenger. He's mm-hmm. running again this year. So the odds right now going into 2020, which we have, I think, 22 months before this next election. The primaries, of course, will be decided before then. But Joe Biden's still the leader, according to the site I have. He's got 4-1 odds to be the Democrat nominee. Bernie Sanders right behind him at +450. Beto tied with Bernie Sanders. And then Kamala Harris, who, in my opinion, I think she's going to get the nomination. I think that Democrats are going to swing it her way. It's tougher for Trump to attack her as an African-American female. Right now, she's at 5-1 odds. And then you got Buttigieg from Indiana. Have you heard of Buttigieg?
No, not a lot. No, I've heard the name.
Well, he's the 5th place guy right now. He's at 7-1 odds. A lot will play out before then.
If you're a gambler, bet the long shot.
Bet the long shot. Take the horse at the back.
Yeah.
8:59. Mike Gallagher Show coming up next. And Midday Mobile after that. That's done it for Mobile Mornings.